Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Today's topic is sometimes a bit difficult to address. We will be talking about female genital cutting, also called FGM, female genital mutilation, or female circumcision. The United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, call for an end to FGM by the year 2030. The SDGs call 5 target 5.3 aims to eliminate all harmful practices such as child early enforced marriage and female genital mutilation. According to the UN, globally, at least 200 million girls and women alive today have undergone some form of FGM. Girls 14 and younger represent 44 million of those who have been cut. On the show today, as I mentioned earlier, we will look at FGM, a practice that is has been around for centuries, really. And joining us in the studio is Angela Peabody. She's executive director and founder of the Global Women Peace Foundation. Angela, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Lenore.
We look forward to this discussion because, I mean, conversations around FGM have been ongoing for years, as well as initiatives to stop the practice. But it's always timely to discuss FGM. And the thing is, there are some people who support the practice, but you are one of those who are advocating against it. So just briefly tell us, why did you get involved?
Well, first of all, I'm from Liberia, West Africa originally, and Liberia happens to be one of the practicing countries on the continent of FGM. And when I discovered it, I grew up around it, but I didn't realize that it was when I came to America and connected the dots, what it was not called FGM in Liberia. It was called female circumcision, okay. Or they didn't even give it a name. They said that thing. So when I finally connected the dots and realized that this is what was happening to little girls that I saw in Liberia when I was growing up with chalk, white chalk all over their bodies. And I read and researched and found out the ramifications of it and the health risks, I just was appalled. And I set out to do something. And I said, somebody has to do something, and that somebody will have to be me.
Yes, and since then, you have not stopped. Your organization's been around for about 10 years now. And we will have more on Angela Peabody on the discussion. We'll start more on the discussion shortly. But first, let's go to Ethiopia, where reporter Amy Yee looks at efforts to help stop FGM in some communities.
Ethiopian nonprofit KMG started educating people about the harmful effects of female genital mutilation in the southern region of Kambata Tambaro in 1998. Bayebo Erisado, a 50-year-old farmer and village elder, says at first he did not believe what he heard. He says, "No, we've been doing it a long time. It can't be harmful. It's our culture. We're doing it to benefit the girl." The procedure can cause hemorrhaging, scarring, infections, and psychological trauma. In Kambata, the practice commonly took the form of cutting off the clitoris and the inner and outer labia. This can cause major health problems, especially during childbirth. Erisado estimated it took 4 years for his community to start changing its attitude toward FGM. As a village elder whose opinion is respected, he played an important role. The shift happened through the work of KMG. The core of its work is holding community conversations. The groups of 50 include people from all walks of life, men and women, young and old, elders and laborers. KMG facilitators guide regular meetings where people discuss issues until they reach consensus. When KMG started out, issues such as women's rights were abstract concepts to struggling poor people. So it addressed day-to-day needs, such as repairing broken bridges and addressing HIV and AIDS. Over time, even taboo subjects such as FGM and gender violence were discussed openly. Since beginning its work, the prevalence of FGM in Ethiopia has dropped to 65% in recent years, compared to 74% more than a decade ago, according to a government report. The United Nations Population Fund credits KMG with a big reduction in the practice. KMG was founded by 63-year-old Wogelech Gebre, who grew up in Kimbata Tembaro and was cut as a girl. During her childhood, girls were not expected to go to school. Gebre, however, went on to study biology at universities in Israel and in the state of Massachusetts in the United States as a Fulbright Fellow. Gebre says including people in community conversations and letting them reach their own conclusions was critical in changing deeply rooted practices.
We don't dictate, we just discuss, we facilitate, we allow them to talk. In that conversation, nobody is wrong, nobody is right, nobody is better knowledgeable than the other. Everything one has spoken in that group has value. There's no judgment, and that makes people comfortable to speak their mind. Women, for the first time, you know, learn that they have something of value, that people listen to them.
People became aware of the health risks of FGM, and they learned there is no religious basis for it in the Bible or Quran. Those ideas were absorbed by the next generation of women and men. Mehrun Abebe was a boy when KMG started working in Kimbata. He says he remembers community conversations about FGM. He says, now the community has accepted the change. KMG has been successful because it's working closely with society. They are not coming in and saying, do this, don't do that. They just facilitate the community to identify its own problem, discuss the problem, and provide solution. KMG has since expanded, and most of its work is now outside Kimbata in neighboring regions. Today, nearly 4 million people benefit from KMG, and thousands of Ethiopian females have been spared. Amy Yee for VOA News, Kimbata Tembaro, Ethiopia.
And Angela, you heard the report. We went from west to your country. You say you witnessed it growing up in your country. We now going to east in Ethiopia. It's a practice that is really everywhere, as the UN mentions. It's really everywhere. What is your reaction in terms of how far we've come? This conversation, again, as I mentioned earlier, has been going on for a long time. How far have we come, really?
We haven't come far enough. We're not even halfway there yet. We, from the time I started the crusade against FGM, we took baby steps and then we took strides, but we're still not where we're supposed to be. It's like a football field or a baseball field. We're just not at the halfway point yet, half field. We still have a lot of work to do, especially so the United Nations wants. They have earmarked 2030, as you mentioned, to be the year that FGM is eliminated from the world.
Mm-hmm. It's only 10 years, really.
It's only 10 years from now. When when they first earmarked it, I said, oh, we have some time. And then I realized last month, oh, we are already 10 years away from it. Will we be able to do it? And while I don't want to be pessimistic, I'm optimistic, and I do believe that there will come a day when we are able to eliminate FGM. I don't know if it will be in my lifetime. I hope it is. I hope I live long enough to see it. But I don't think it's going to happen in 10 years. I think we will make a lot of strides and we will accomplish a lot in this last 10 years, but I don't think we will get to where it's eliminated completely. But I do want to say that I'm optimistic about it being eliminated eventually.
Optimism is good indeed, especially when you talk about something so difficult to address, which is FGM. I mean, you're talking about people's culture. You don't just come and take it away. Some people will tell you, my grandmothers have done it, my ancestors have done it, and they've survived, they had children, you know, and everything is fine. Why is it a problem all of a sudden? So I'm asking you this question. What do you tell these people who say, it's been ongoing for generations. Why is it a problem now that it's the West coming up with all these ideas? What do you tell them?
So is
murder and racism.
Racism. That's a good point.
Racism has been in the world, or in this country specifically, in the United States for centuries. Mm-hmm. But does that make
it right?
It doesn't
make it right, right?
It yes. doesn't. So yeah. because FGM has been around for the past, for more than five centuries, mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that it's right. Yes. We have to look at, and yes, I'm a stickler when it comes to traditions. I uphold my cultural traditions from West Africa. I teach my grandchildren now about how to be proud of their traditions and their cultures. But when a tradition hurts and harms little girls, then you have to take a look at it and reconsider your stance on it. Let's face it. FGM is, while it is a tradition, but it's not necessary. Mm-hmm. It's not a medical necessary practice. It's something that is done simply because our great-great-great-great-grandparents did it. So does that make it right? No. And the only thing I say to people is we educate them. The people who practice it, they are ignorant. They don't realize that what you're doing to this little girl will follow her for the rest of her life.
That's should if she survives.
If she survives, if she exactly. survives.
Because it's ironic, because there was in the news, I was reading the news, and I saw that there is a father in Egypt who was just arrested days ago. His daughter underwent the procedure and she died.
Yes.
So there are so many cases where these girls die.
Yes.
And it's just something that really needs to be talked about. But when we look at advocates that really believe in it, I mean, there are so many aspects of this practice, because you have the people who profit from it in terms of economically, the cutters, okay? You have the culture gatekeepers, if you will say, for example, if this girl is not cut, she will not get married. She yes. cannot get married. You have the mothers who say, this is a way to ensure that you remain a virgin. You know, there are so many different aspects of it. So how do you break it down and change mentality? How do you even do that? What is the alternative there?
Well, culturally, traditional and culturally, they take the girls into the bush, to the society bush, and they teach them different traditions, how to become a good wife in the future, how to become a good mother and a good housekeeper, how to make baskets, and they teach them household things. And if they were only doing that and extract the cutting out of that society, they would get me raising money to support them.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing they do when the girls get in there is to cut them. So if you just look at the positives from what you do, from the practice, when you take the girls into the bush, in the society bush, teach them all of those things and even more. I would come and help you, give you more resources, educational resources, to teach them, make it a real school for girls. But without the cutting, why? Mm-hmm. Why is the cutting necessary? Like you said, you pointed out, because she will not be marriageable. That is bunk. She's going to be marriageable, because I have young men who come to me and say, I don't want a woman who's been cut. I don't want to marry her.
So maybe in this case, in a case like this, we need to hear more from the men as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I try to encourage men to get involved in this. I even said to one young man who his entire family from generations, all of the females in his entire family, including his sister, have been cut. And there's only one little girl that we are working hard to save, to keep her from getting cut. And she would be the first in his entire family generations, wow, who will not be cut. She would be making history if we are successful in continuing to save her. And I've tried to tell him, you need to get men together and form an organization called Men Against FGM.
Yes. Yes, that's a good point. Because a lot of times, men's voices are needed. And sometimes they may be against something, but they don't come forward.
Yes.
And an initiative like that will help a little. Because if you are protecting your girl from, you want her to stay virgin so she can get married, but then the men say, I don't want to marry her because she's cut, what are you going to do?
And the women claim that they are doing it because of the men. The men don't usually get involved, especially in the western part of the continent of Africa. The men don't, the fathers don't get involved. Like in this case where in Egypt, the father was arrested because in the east, I noticed the eastern countries, the fathers tend to get involved. And sometimes they do it themselves.
Wow.
But it's in the West, the men don't get it. Yes, it's women who do it to the girls. And so they claim that they're doing it for the men, to satisfy the men. Well, if the men come out and say, no, don't do it for me because I don't want with girls who have been cut, maybe that will speak louder than all of us women who have been advocating for years.
Maybe that's one direction, to encourage more men to come out, because this conversation around FGM, again, as I mentioned earlier, it's been ongoing for years.
Yes.
It's been ongoing for years. There are some communities that have made some progress. I mean, we heard a report in Ethiopia with what they've been trying to do there, and your work as well. You were able to see some results, but may not be enough, not fast enough, because for one girl that is protected against this, there are maybe 10. I'm just saying a number like this, but who knows what's going on in the bushes? You know, there are everywhere, so many countries.
Every day, at least 8,000 girls are cut around the world.
Yeah.
Every day. And when I wake up in the morning, every morning, I think about those 8,000 girls that are already cut or going to be cut that day.
You know, the funny thing, I mean, not funny in terms of laughing about it, but it's when I've done so much in terms of interviews and stories around FGM. And one of the things that I find fascinating is people tend to associate it with religion. And then I talk to religious leaders, they say it's not in the Quran, it's not in the Bible, it's nowhere to be found in a religious book. So what is this about religion?
They hide behind religion, and it really annoys me because, like you said, it's not, if you talk to the imams and you read the Quran, I have read the Quran, there's nothing in it that says female circumcision. And talk to religious leaders, they will tell you it's not in the, and I've read the Bible cover to cover, it's not in there. It's not in the Jewish Torah either. So where is it coming from as religion? It's a cultural practice.
We tend to see, or perhaps it's a perception, that in communities that are Muslims, people have this perception that it's more prevalent there. Is it a reality or just a perception?
It is more prevalent. But I wouldn't say, because, for example, several of the women, we call them survivors of FGM, who have come to my organization for help, a lot of them are from Catholic background or Christian background. And it's not so, I wouldn't go as far as saying it's most prevalent in the Muslim communities. There might be more women who have undergone it in the Muslim communities, but it has nothing to do with their religion.
Yeah.
It's simply because they just happen to be Muslims And maybe the ethnic group practices happen to be Muslim.
Yeah, because it's a perception that people have. And I thought, you know, it's important to clarify. Because, again, it's nowhere in the religious books, at least those that we are familiar with, Christian, Muslim, Jewish. So it's something worth clarifying. So when a girl calls you, and you live here in the state and you work here, but your outreach also goes beyond the state, you also impact Africa and everything. When a girl calls you and she says, I've been cut or I will be cut, what can you do for them? Like concretely, what are you able to do?
If she's afraid that she's going to be cut, she's at risk, what I would do then, if she's in the United States, I'm going to call in the FBI.
Because there are policies and
laws
that have banned that practice.
If she's, for example, if she's in Liberia, I'm going to be frustrated because there is no law in that country or Sierra Leone. So we would then have to go to somebody on the ground that we have connections with to ask them to rescue this girl.
Okay.
And it's going to take a lot of... We went through that several years ago with three little girls in Liberia who fled for their lives when they realized they were tipped off that they were going to be cut.
Oh, wow.
So we had to get State Department involved here and then get people on the ground in Liberia who were willing to rescue these girls and get them to a safe house.
Wow.
If she's here and at risk in the United States, it's much easier because we know the process and we know we are able to physically protect her even more. When they come to us and say, I've been cut and I'm in pain most of the time, that's what it is. They are in pain, and it happened to them when they were much younger, but now they are older and they're still in physical and psychological pain. So then we bring them into our support group, and we always have a psychologist there on site in our meetings to talk to them, either one-on-one if they are not comfortable talking in the group, or they can talk within the group. And then we also raise money and offer them the reconstructive surgery.
Mm-hmm.
If they are interested in that, most of them are, which will help to restore what was removed from their genitalia.
Okay. Well, we talked about the importance of men getting involved, right? I think it's time to have a little note of hope, because in Kenya, there is a man who took action to be an advocate against the practice. And I wanted us to listen to this report. It's among the Maasai community. You know, women have lived under strict patriarchal system for hundreds of years, and FGM has been a significant ritual for generations. Once circumcised, a girl as young as 10 is considered a woman and can be given away for marriage to an older man. In 2008, Douglas Mertime, at that time a student, fed up with the harsh patriarchal system that kept girls away from school, decided to challenge members of his community by speaking against FGM. Let's take a listen.
Douglas Meritei grew up in the foothills of Mount Kilimanjaro as a member of the Maasai tribe.
I remember when I was in primary school, when I was a young boy, I would look around my class and see only Maasai boys. The girls were from other tribes, but rarely Maasai girls.
Meritei says the girls were being married off at a young age after undergoing female circumcision, a traditional rite of womanhood among the Maasai. But activists call it female genital mutilation, FGM, because of the permanent damage caused by cutting a woman's clitoris. Lilian Ashepai underwent the procedure as a young girl and says excessive bleeding is common and some even die.
We know the girls who have not been circumcised. Sometimes they visit these homes. I ask, where is so-and-so? They say she is here. If she is walking properly, I know that she has not been circumcised. If the girl is not walking properly, we arrest the father and mother.
In the Maasai community, women are the ones who perform the cutting and therefore have the power to end the practice. So Meritei works closely with Maasai women. He says since 2008, he has rescued over 100 girls from FGM, but had to first face off with his own people and tradition.
When we started this campaign, it was difficult. Others would ask, has Douglas gone mad? Even as they continued to speak. This was something that was deep in my heart. I did not give up. When I heard of any form of meeting in the area, I would come in and speak against FGM.
Campaigns like Meritei's led to Kenya outlawing FGM in 2011. But the practice still occurs in remote rural areas, says Kimana's chief, Joseph Parmuat.
We work with Douglas to reach such girls. When we get that information, we have police on standby. We go to the location, arrest all those involved, the parents, the person who performed the act, then we take the girl to the rescue center.
According to a 2016 United Nations report, one in five females in Kenya have undergone FGM, but those numbers are going down. Authorities and campaigners, including Meritei, are promoting an alternative rite of passage where girls are graduated into womanhood without the cutting. Raya Lumbor, for VOA News, Kimana.
Corruption, the abuse of public funds for private gain, has impoverished otherwise resource-rich countries, siphoning hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, from developing and developed countries alike. Host Carol Castiel and VOA TV senior analyst Jeffrey Young talk with Frank Vogel, founder of Transparency International, about the adverse impact of corruption and what can be done to combat it. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us tonight, we are discussing FGM, female genital cutting, with our guest, Angela Peabody, Executive Director and founder of the Global Women Peace Foundation. So we are 10 years from the 2030 goals, SDGs. We talked about it earlier. What do you say in terms of making significant progress? What will it take at this point?
It will take a lot of awareness raising. We've done a lot of that in the last 10 years, but we still need to do more. Okay. We need to not just have the walk to end FGM or to have town hall meetings and meet with politicians. And then we also do advocacy work, reaching out to beyond the United States into Africa, into parts of Africa. But what I would like to see happen is for FGM to be part of the curriculum in all schools in the world. Whether it's in the United States, whether it's in parts of Africa or all of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Australia, Europe, right now it is being taught in
schools. It's a hard subject to tackle, though. I know we're going to wrap very soon. It's a hard subject to tackle. What do they teach? What do they say then? What is the subject?
You teach the children about it, okay, so they know what to look for. Okay. If they think they're going to be at risk, okay, of it or it's imminent, then they will know. But right now, the way it stands, they don't know. The girls, yes, don't know about it, and yes, definitely boys don't know.
Okay.
The more they know, the more they can even try to protect themselves.
Yes.
Angela Peabody, we have to leave it there. It was so good to have you on the show. This conversation is endless and ongoing. And we thank you for your time and your great work. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Angela Peabody, Executive Director and Founder of the Global Women Peace Foundation. I'm your host, Lynor Moudou in Washington, with producer Daniel Brown and engineer Joe. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every.
And it is now up to us.
This is VOA News.